Nature and religion come together in writer Brenda Peterson's new memoir, I Want to Be Left Behind. Peterson grew up in a natural paradise, in a forest ranger cabin in a remote wilderness, with a family that prayed eagerly for the end times to come so they could leave this earth. She told Steve Paulson that as a child she felt torn apart.
These two strains were the paradox of my childhood, because my father, who is part Native and taught me everything about the natural world and other animals, also ascribed to this belief system, and I couldn't put them together. It didn't fit because there was a belief system that was disembodied, and I had grown up for 5 years on this forest lookout station with more animals and acres of wilderness than people. So my perspective was really much more Native and much more this idea of the earth is bountiful, the earth is abundant, the earth is sacred. And I think that what happens is when you have a belief system that doesn't jive with your experience, i.e. the forest, then you spend a lot of time trying to figure out how there's a common ground.
So how did this play out with your family then as you grew up and grew away from their religion? Was this hard in terms of how you and your parents got along?
It was difficult for the larger extended family. My parents and I have come to a hard-won equipoise because we did grow up in that cabin on the forest together. And there's a chapter in the book that goes to Baja with my father and mother. By the way, she worked for the CIA for 17 years, so you can see that she also had that belief system. And in the plane bound to the Baja birthing lagoons of the gray whales, my parents and I make a vow, no politics, no religion. And we actually come back to that beautiful trinity that we had in the forest cabin.
I want to ask you a little bit more about that trip you took with your elderly parents to Baja California, going to see the gray whales and their birthing lagoons. You tell a remarkable story about what it was like floating out in your little boat with these huge whales all around you.
These are what Jean-Paul Christophe calls floating planets, these gray whales, and they are survivors of many whale hunts. They come, in fact, they're there right now, and they give birth and they mate in these beautiful, buoyant saltwater lagoons in remote parts of Baja Peninsula. Now, these whales come to the boats. It's not that we chase them down. It's a biosphere. There are rules. And you can go parallel, and the mother-calf pairs can choose to encounter humans. And the miracle is that they do. They come to the boats for physical interaction. A wild species who was twice hunted to the brink of extinction comes to our boats and reaches out to be touched. And as Lupita, our naturalist in Baja, said, we can only think of it as forgiveness.
Now, a lot of people, a lot of Americans love nature, at least say they love nature. It's almost become un-American not to love nature. But you seem to take this passion further than most of us. Is it fair to say there's a spiritual dimension to your connection to the natural world?
I definitely feel that my relationship to the earth is a sacred and daily practice of spirituality. I'm hoping to balance our spirituality so that instead of saying, like the Southern Baptist hymn, this world is not my home, I'm just a passing through, or that it's Maya, or that it's just something to be endured while we go to the next level, I'm hoping that we will look at this earth as our home and our soul's habitat.
Now, there do seem to be some similarities between the apocalyptic doomsday visions of religious fundamentalists and those of hardcore environmentalists, the people who talk about how global warming and rampant consumerism are going to destroy the planet. I guess it does raise the question, how far would you push that analogy?
It was an analogy that I resisted about 10 years ago when I first came up with it as an environmental editor and writer. And I would go to these environmental groups and I would see the same kind of ferocity and fundamentalism and actual verbal violence that I had witnessed in the Southern Baptist tradition in my past. And I didn't want to see that. I didn't want to even go there. But I had to. I just sat down and made a list of what we shared in common between environmental fundamentalists and rapture end-timers. And I found, to my horror, that there were many similarities, and I list them.
What are some of those similarities?
Well, humorlessness is the first one I would really go for. Have you ever seen a stand-up fundamentalist comic, either environmentalist or religious fundamentalist? It just doesn't happen. Here's my list. Fundamentalist, environmentalist, two columns. Enraptured by doom, enraptured by doom. Apocalypse now. Righteous anger, thou shalt not, holier than thou. Blame, shame, judgment, evangelical. And when I made that list, it was very hard for me to look at it. And then I had to ask myself, am I a fundamentalist as an environmentalist? So then I had to step back and say, oh no, can I find a middle path? And how can I navigate between extremes?
At one point in your book, you write, what if environmentalists stopped portraying nature as crucified? What if both camps simply stopped all their fear-mongering and found a new story?
Yes, yes. I talk about this. Original sin among fundamentalists is easily translated into pollution among environmentalists. And in the biblical story, we eat of the forbidden tree and are fallen. And in the green story, we cut down the sacred tree and are self-doomed. So we have biblical Armageddon that parallels mass extinction.
So what would a new environmental story look like? I mean, at least the one that you would like to see.
It would be full of imagination and not fear. It would be full of a kind of humor and not taking ourselves so seriously. These tragic visions constrict the imagination and make us fixated on apocalypse instead of on the enduring earth and the enduring species. And it's an escape from having to do the more mature and difficult gray area work of really figuring out how we and all other species can survive. So I think the word apocalypse really means revelation. So we need less apocalypse and more revelation.
What is your idea of the sacred? I don't know if you would have a definition or just sort of an idea of it, but I'd love to know what that word means to you.
All that is alive is sacred. All that is alive around me, in me, every person, every stone, every river, everything that is alive is sacred. I live on the water down here in Seattle in the Salish Sea, and every morning I wake up and I see eagles, gray whales, otters. There are great blue herons fishing right off my backyard beach. How could I not believe that everything that is alive and sentient, everything that is alive, everything that is created is sacred?
Brenda Peterson, talking with Steve Paulson about her memoir, I Want to Be Left Behind. She's also just come out with a young adult novel called The Drowning World.